When you watch a film, you're doing exactly that. You're watching it. But that means somebody else had to watch something through a lens so you can see it. We're going to talk to someone who knows exactly about that on The Fly Filmmaking.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
Hey everyone, I'm Mary Lou Mandel, your host for On the Fly Filmmaking, and today we have a wonderful guest, Jim Frohna, who is the cinematographer of Transparent, along with many other amazing projects. Thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have you. You're a first cinematographer.
Is that right?
Which is like one of my favorite things on a set, is figuring out how the image is created. Mm-hmm. So I really, really appreciate you being here. Where can people find you if they want to get more information on you?
Well, I guess they just go on to the internet.
Yep, right. That's what I did. Google.
I do have a website that is a bit outdated at this point, you know, with busy lives. That's just my name, jimfrohna.com. Otherwise, I like to post things on Instagram mostly.
Instagram?
Occasionally, I'll creep around on Facebook, but very seldomly.
All right, yeah. Instagram is my favorite as well. Yeah. And then being somebody from a visual medium, I can see that being where it's at for you. And then I also saw you had a Twitter.
Yes.
But again, you don't really get on it?
Not so much.
I'll teach you how to connect them. It's fine.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I got tricks for that. So awesome. I'm Mary Lou Mandel. You can find me all over the internet at Mary Lou Mandel. And if you are enjoying this show, please make sure you subscribe to the podcast or the show on YouTube, Popcorn Talk Network, right here. So Jim is a cinematographer. Tell the kids at home what a cinematographer does.
The cinematographer works very, very closely, intimately in collaboration with the director.
Okay.
And I would say, in addition to the director, the DP or cinematographer also works a lot in communication with the production designer. Mm-hmm. Because between production design and the camera and shooting style, that is so much of the foundation of bringing a show to life, of bringing the director's vision into actuality.
Yes.
So it's collaborating, you know, sharing stories, sharing ideas, brainstorming, walking through locations with a director, making decisions about what is the feeling of the scene, how are we going to, you know, approach this, both in terms of the lens choices, but also in terms of, you know, it could be on a dolly where it's gliding across a room, mm-hmm. or it's handheld so you're more activated and involved when it's a handheld camera. Those kind of choices come up in all the pre-production conversations. And hopefully, you know, in the best relationship, collaboration, you're in total sync after having done all that prep work, so you show up and you just start bringing it to life.
Right, because you and your position and what your team does is the bridge between it being a film and just being theater.
Sure.
You know, and it just changes the form of the art a little bit, because without the camera team, then it's just a performance out in the world, which is also awesome.
Right. No, I get what you mean. And I mean, it is part of the magic, for sure, and that's definitely why I think I was even drawn to it in the first place. And just to get to the nitty-gritty for another moment, so the cinematographer is also in charge of the whole camera department, also has the lighting and grip departments under their, you know, domain, we'll say.
Right.
You know, there's heads of those departments, but, you know, that it's a big chunk of the on-set crew that are under the DP.
Right, so you are in charge of, collaboratively and on your own, like making decisions on the look of a project.
Yep.
That's awesome. And this is something that I think not a lot of cinematographers do, but you also operate. Like, I think sometimes they come from operating the cameras, but not necessarily.
I feel like there's no hard, fast rule about, you know, that a DP should or should not, or can or can't. Mm-hmm. I do feel like it's a personal choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes on, you know, depending on the budget, it's like, the DP is going to operate because there's no money to pay an operator or operators. But I know that, you know, certain DPs like Roger Deakins always operates.
Yes.
I'm sure he still has operators, but he prefers to operate. And then there's some DPs who want to be right there sitting next to the director, receiving information, you know, being part of the flow of it, but then delivering it to the operators, and much prefer to be really seeing the whole image the whole time. Whereas I've always loved operating. And it's one of the joys of my job to grab the camera. And, you know, both I like it when I'm on a dolly or, you know, in studio mode, which is when the camera's fixed to either a tripod or a dolly. Mm-hmm. it doesn't mean you're moving on the dolly, but that's just called studio mode versus handheld.
Right.
I also prefer handheld again, right. And that's a big part of, I'm sure we'll get into it, part of the way that we shoot transparent. But anyway, it's part of the fun. It's like you're getting in there. It's playing in the playground or the sandbox.
You want to sit in the sandbox. You don't want to just like babysit the people who are playing.
Exactly.
You're like, oh, put the blocks that way, Billy. Yeah, yeah. No, you're like, give me the blocks. Let's play.
That's a good way of thinking about it.
I love that. I really like that too, because for things that I produce on my own, like a lot of the times, like I'm in front of the camera, but then I'll also get behind the camera. Like I love to film things because the way that I might see something, like we might both see this cup. And the way that I'll shoot it will be different than the way that you shoot it.
Yes.
And then there's so many toys you can play with. Like, you can spend all your money on camera gear.
Right, right. And actually, that reminds me of, that is something that is very, very cool about storytelling generally. And then storytelling with a camera specifically. Mm-hmm. But you made me also just think of, you know, when, let's say I'm on a family trip. I have two daughters and now they're both teenagers. But even when my younger daughter was... Well, both of them, this is true of, but especially I recall my younger daughter, you know, asking for my phone to take pictures while we're driving down the road. And what she sees out the window is not what I would see.
Mm-hmm.
And one, it gave me some bit of pleasure feeling like, oh, maybe my daughter has inherited some of my, you know, visual connection to the world.
Yeah.
But also just the fact that it's like, I love that, again, had I been sitting, you know, in the other seat with, you know, not driving, I may have taken a totally different picture of the exact same moment out the window and just how that's what's cool about, you know, living and paying attention.
Right. It's just wonderful. And that's something that I like. I really, really love cameras and what they can do for you and like capturing a moment and portraying your vision to the world of like whatever it may be, if it's a photo or a video, like making the choice between a photo or a video even gives you so much creativity.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, because that's the different things that you do with the same kind of item. So it's really great. So I want to talk a little bit now about how you got started. So, you know, which is like interesting because you're talking about your daughter and like maybe she's into this too. So was there a moment like that for you?
Well, I'm going to start way at the beginning.
Yes, go back to the beginning.
I don't even know.
I feel like we need transitions.
For this. Exactly. The Muppets were first on television.
Yes.
And they had a Muppet show. Mm-hmm. And I love the Muppets.
And I saw on Twitter, that's on your bio, that you're a would-be Muppet.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Yes. So so as a kid, I, you know, worshipped them. They were only on once a week. You couldn't catch them on, you know, there were no videos to stream at any time that you wanted. You had to wait every Thursday night the Muppet Show was on. And they had a Muppet Show fan club that you could sign up for. And once a month you'd get these newsletters that had, you know, fun little backgrounds on the different performers and, you know, the history of a Muppet or how they make a Muppet or whatever. But then when the first Muppet movie came out, in the newsletter they had these behind the scenes photos of a film set. And so my kind of enchantment with Kermit and the other Muppets suddenly disappeared and I was completely smitten, hypnotized, whatever. It's like, who are all those people?
Yeah.
Those are the people that make the magic. They made that movie. What's that person's job? What's that? And it's like this one black and white picture I can remember seeing, you know, of, again, on a soundstage or something. I was like, I want to go there.
Yes.
And from that moment on, I was like, I got to end up in Hollywood somehow.
Yes.
And, you know, like many people, I ended up going to film school. I went to NYU, which was a blast. Being a kid from Wisconsin and ending up in New York City was really half the adventure in addition to
that's gotta be a culture shock.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was great. You know, I went there, I was like, I want to write, I want to direct, you know, that's what everyone pretty much goes into film school, you know, with that burning in their souls. And in fact, after I graduated, I did some writing. I have a dear friend who's actually also now a DP, and we started trying our hand at screenplays together when we first moved out here. And then he was also getting work doing lighting. And he said, hey, you know, I'll get you on the crew, and that way we can have the same schedule for when we want to try and write. Mm-hmm. The writing didn't pan out, which was fine, but it was a really fun period to be, you know, trying to whip up stories with your best friend.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, I get into lighting, which I'd done a little bit of in film school, but suddenly this thing opened up where it's like, oh, I like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually good at it, and it's fun. And it became, you know, apparent to the people who were hiring the crew because I quickly rose up to gaffer, which is the head of the lighting department.
Mm-hmm.
This was mostly in the commercial world. I did do some features and music videos and things like that as a gaffer. But and then after a few years of that, I started paying attention to the camera guys and, you know, and women and what was happening over there. And what I realize now looking back is that it was all this kind of journey to continue to be part of the storytelling. Mm-hmm. So while, you know, when I was younger, I could have like cursed myself like, oh, why am I not, you know, telling my own stories or doing this or that? But the fact is each of these periods of my life led to the next thing, because what happened was one, you know, director that I had said, you know, I'm interested in shooting, ended up hiring me to shoot something. And then another director that knew me as a gaffer said, oh, Jim's shooting now. Let's hire him. And so these years that maybe one could say were, you know, off the direct route to storytelling were actually exactly what led me into mm-hmm. my DP career, you know, taking off. And it's something that happens for ACs and gaffers. Uh-huh. A lot of them transition or try to transition. And I was very, very fortunate that it was a pretty small period of time between when I said, you know, out loud to the universe, I want to be a DP.
Right.
Or I am a DP. And then the, you know, my career taking off.
Yeah, I love that story because I find that a lot in production where you explore something. And I always try to encourage people to do this where they're like, I want to work in filmmaking. I want to work in production. I don't know what I want to do. I'm like, well, start something that is interesting.
Yeah.
Then you will learn other things and you can move within the world.
Right.
You know, as you discover something else. And then when you start telling people, oh, this is what I do, then you do that.
Yes. Yeah. And I feel like a film set, I mean, I also used to be a summer camp counselor, mm-hmm. like sleepaway camp counselor. And there's very similar qualities to, you know, the oddballs and misfits and colorful people that make up a film crew.
Yes.
That work at summer camps. Mm-hmm. And like, or like, you know, maybe, I've never been in a traveling circus, but I feel like it's the same idea. Like, there's just some part of some people that want to be in that, you know, craziness, mm-hmm. we'll call it. And then you just sort of listen to your, you know, inner soul saying, this is where, within this craziness, this is where I want to be.
Yeah, this is where I fit in the tribe.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Like something might not fit just right, but that's still going to inform your next step.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm sure all of the positions that you had leading up to being a DP feed your knowledge.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, part of it is how does a set work?
Yeah.
What is it like to be on a crew? What is it like to be leading a crew mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, running the lighting crew? The other thing that, you know, I would like to mention is that, so then there was, you know, the period of, okay, now I'm a DP in commercials and I'm making money to support my family, but I really want to be in narrative. Mm-hmm. And how do you do that? And, you know, talking to my agents and saying, you know, can you put me up for independent features or whatever it is? And there's this thing that happens, which again, I think might be interesting or relevant, or resonate with listeners or watchers, viewers, is that you get this answer or you get this response like, well, you've never done a feature mm-hmm. from a producer who's, you know, got an independent feature, but it's this thing like, well, how do you
right.
get a feature until you, how do you get hired for a feature if person on the hiring end is saying, but you've never done one.
Right. And that across the board, I've heard that with every kind of position in front of the camera, behind the camera,
right.
everywhere where they're like, well, you've never done this exact
right.
thing.
Right.
So how do you get to that
How
point.
Do I know? And right. And of course, a producer's job is to, you know, make sound judgments to make sure the thing happens, right? So mm-hmm. of course, taking a risk is not necessarily the first thing that they're going to do, right? But it's something that I was able to overcome when I met Jill Soloway and shot Jill's feature, Afternoon Delight, mm-hmm. which was 5 years ago this August.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Well, thank you. I mean, I mentioned that because so much has happened,
yeah.
you know, in her career, in my career, and, you know, in the things we've created together.
Yeah.
It's been an amazing thing. So, which is also to say, like, again, to your point that you said earlier, it's like each thing that I went through, each chapter of my journey or whatever, each experience I had on set definitely readied me for this, you know,
period
that I'm in now.
And that is an awesome story. And I have to say that as a visual storyteller and an audible storyteller, you're fantastic. Like, I just started binge watching Transparent, so I'm somewhere in the middle of the first season. But even, like, straight from the pilot, I was like, this guy knows how to tell a story with an image.
That's cool. Thank
because
you.
There's these moments of, like, hiding information or showing information, and the way the camera movements kind of make you feel what they're feeling. Mm-hmm. Like they're disoriented, so like it's a little more handheld, or there's pans, when we first get the reveal of the dad is wearing a nightgown, he walks out, but it's just on the floor, and you see
the feet.
You see his pants fall, he disappears, he comes back, and he's in a robe.
Right.
You know, like, granted, like, I already had knowledge of the show, so sure. I knew this was coming, but like the way that is handled is just so wonderful. And I couldn't imagine watching that show not knowing anything about it. Mm-hmm. Like that, like, oh my gosh, moment of the reveal of that. It's just so wonderful. And then I find that further going into the season, you know, there's just more of that feeling, what the characters are feeling by the way, like the choices that you made in cinematography. So good job.
Well, thank you very much.
I adore it. So I want to chat with you a little bit about some of your other projects before we get into more specifics on cinematography. So you've done stuff with Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes.
Which is fun.
That was a blast.
That was a documentary?
So here's what that was. It was put out, it was released on a DVD with other behind-the-scenes stuff or a concert tour or something like that. But my part of it was actually just a video. Mm-hmm. But it was actually, you know, per the story I was telling earlier, it was the second thing I ever shot.
Right. So where is this in the career? So you've worked in the lighting department.
Right. So I get, and Dayton Ferris, the husband and wife directing team who directed many Chili Peppers videos, including the one that I did for the song Tell Me Baby. They also do, they're still in commercials, but at the time they were doing a ton of commercials, and I worked with DPs who they hired, and so I knew them pretty well. But it was great that they were one of the, you know, directing teams that said, oh, Jim's shooting, let's try him out. And it was this amazing experience where it was set up like an audition. So all these musicians were coming into this tiny space, this little black box theater somewhere in the valley, thinking that they were auditioning to be in the video. Mm-hmm. But in fact, that was the video, the auditions. And then, you know, if they were called back, they came in, and let's say a guitarist and a drummer who didn't know each other were playing those parts of the song. And then through this tiny door at the back wall, in came the other members of the Chili Peppers to fill out the band. Mm-hmm. So all these young musicians or, you know, older musicians, whatever, had no idea this was coming. And so part of the video is the fun of seeing the Chili Peppers take the stage. But I also just told this whole story because then when the people who were auditioning were done, the Chili Peppers played live in a space that was like a 30 by 20 room.
Right.
And the power of their skill, talent, passion, joy, everything was really a total rush and a blast. It was like the icing on the cake of this fun video project, but
fun.
Yes, it was cool. And again, it's like something like that was something unique, different, and got attention from other directors who then hired me. Because, like I said, this was essentially the second thing I ever shot as a DP.
And is it something that was it a concept that you came up with, or they came to this concept?
They came to me, and and I ended up working with them on a few other things right after that. And they were pivotal in terms of my VP career. The first director who hired me is a guy named Mike Mills, who's an excellent filmmaker who just did a movie called 20th Century Women that came out with Annette Bening. And, I'd done a lot of stuff with him as a gaffer, but, I shot a documentary with him in Japan about depression.
Yeah.
And that was a, you know, totally unique world story and type of filmmaking.
Yeah.
But so once people heard, oh, Mike Mills, he also did a movie called Beginners, which came out a few years ago. And anyway, he's a very talented, smart, sensitive soul. And so again, Mike hires me, then these other directors start saying,
look, Jim shooting. Does this. Yeah, definitely. So you started in commercial and then you did some documentary?
I would say.
Kind of mixed in there?
I would say the short answer is yes, I started in commercial. And then as a DP, ended up doing like three or four, maybe a couple more documentaries. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved documentaries.
Yeah.
And
is there a style of all of these that you prefer?
In terms of?
Of documentary versus narrative. Because even in like Transparent, it's still shot like documentary-ish.
Right.
Or there's moments.
Right. Well, yes. And I think the thing that I loved about documentary is you have to you're there totally present. You have no idea what's going to unfold, mm-hmm. right? So in terms of the camera work, you just have to be open and ready for whatever. And that is definitely something that, as you mentioned, and something that I love about the way that we shoot the show is that is our approach. I mean, that is the foundation of our approach. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, we can, again, you can tell me if we dive in now or we can dive in later.
No, can dive in now.
You know, something that Jill Soloway, who created the show, and I talked about from the beginning was this notion of like, how do we create a way of storytelling where you feel like it's unfolding before you. Mm-hmm. And obviously in a documentary, you're not controlling the elements. So that's how it's different. But in this case, it's like, well, let's shoot in a style where we are participating actively. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is what brings on the feeling of like you feel what the characters are feeling,
exactly.
Where there's an intimacy or a connection or something. Mm-hmm. And, but we also do some, you know, things that are a little crazy and challenging, but are now a beautiful part of our process, which is oftentimes don't rehearse. You know, there's a whole thing of, you know, an actor has their mark. So they walk into the room and there's a set mark so that the camera, you know, focus puller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the camera can catch it and they're in focus. And on our transparent, we don't really set marks. Maybe for a specific shot every now and then we will, but generally the actors come into the room and they're able to use the entire space and the cameras just kind of have to catch up with what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously after a couple takes where we as the, whether I'm operating or the awesome operators are, you start to feel out the shape of the scene. And then I'm starting to pay attention to like, okay, well, we know we have to get her when she's over by the window, but we basically have, you know, the majority of the coverage done, but it's a very living, breathing, alive, sometimes spontaneous and
on the fly. Oh my gosh.
Exactly. So in that way, the kind of readiness factor from documentaries definitely translated into, you know, what I could bring to how we shoot these shows. And then there's a whole other thing with, you know, how we light and the naturalism and that, mm-hmm. that Jill always wanted that was the kind of lighting I always did and was drawn to. Which also translates to, you know, most of our show is shot on stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I was going to ask you. Are the sets built in 360?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we're lucky to have, you know, the resources and the budget to, like, the Pfefferman House exists mm-hmm. in South Pasadena, but we shoot at Paramount, and it's almost a, you know, exact duplicate built on stage of that. And it's a pretty big house. It's a beautiful house. So I will always light things like we're in the real world, which is, you know, light coming in from windows. So on a lot of stages or in a lot of sets, there's no ceiling and there'll be, you know, a light rig above so you can drop in, you know, a backlight or whatever you want to do. But we have ceilings on our sets, one, because that way for the actors, it feels like that much more of a real space.
Yeah.
And then, and knowing that the camera can look anywhere and it's not going to suddenly look up into the, you know, theatrical mm-hmm. lights or whatever. But the other thing is that I will always light from outside the windows, which is, again, where daylight comes in mm-hmm. anyway. So that also means that the set is free of a lot of gear. So the actors in that way, too, it's like the actors could move from the couch, go up these little stairs and head, you know, down the hall and the camera could follow them. And the
whole
space
amazing.
And the space is lit.
Yeah.
It's not about a particular shot or a particular moment. It's like mm-hmm. light the space and pay attention.
Yeah.
And connect.
And feel it. Stay connected with the scene, just like the performer. So, and I think that's where, as a viewer, it definitely feels like you're in the room because the camera work is in the room.
Yes.
Like very literally experiencing it as the actors are experiencing it.
Yes. So, and that is true.
Beautiful choice.
Well, thank you.
And I definitely see how that translates from a style of somebody who shot documentary.
Yeah.
You know, where you just have to live in this world. Like everything that I shoot is usually like sizzle reels for events and mm-hmm. things that are live. And there's like a short window. And you just have to capture as much as possible
right.
in this 3-hour window of people being excited about XYZ. Mm-hmm. And utilizing that into shooting like my own little narrative projects, it's just like, well, like we've got this little bit amount of time. to do as much as possible and capture what we can, and then afterwards we'll put it together. It will be fine.
Yes.
It will be fine. And that's something that, like, I want to always share with people who are aspiring filmmakers, is that it doesn't have to be all perfect for you.
Yes.
To go make the art.
Yes. I think that is actually a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two things in that. One is just the way you said it, it will be fine. You're trusting one, just your own experiences, knowing how things, you know, what you can get out of something, but also just trusting, just saying it's going to work out.
Yeah.
As opposed to it has to work out. It has to be this exact thing. Why didn't we get that? And life in general, right? And especially in creative endeavors, we can end up, you know, chopping off our own legs or whatever, you know, metaphor or analogy you want to think of. It's like, expectation leads to anxiety and fear, and then you're choking your own creativity.
Yeah.
And this whole idea of things don't have to be perfect is like, that could be a tattooed on all of our, you know, hearts and arms or whatever on Transparent and other things that I do with Jill. It's like, it is about the imperfections. Mm-hmm. It's about the flawed humans. It's about, you know, is the focus always perfect? No, because the character's out of sorts and they're trying to figure out who they are.
Yeah.
And the focus puller is chasing and maybe, you know, gets all tense and nervous. And I'm at this point, 4 seasons in, they get the language and they can, you know, speak it. But it's so against the grain of what we're all led to believe, which is you better get it right. You better not mess up, or, you know, say it in a more vulgar way, whatever.
Yes.
You know, but that it's like, no, it's fine if the focus is off, because sometimes we're off in life, or that character was off in that scene. And that was a huge, huge thing. Much of it came from working with Jill and having her be such an incredible leader and artist and writer and director, et cetera. It's like the amount of trust and generosity and openness that Jill has allows everybody to be able to kind of ride that same wave and be like, you're saying when it's like, it's going to work out and let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
Discover
together. Create some art. Let's go. And it's beautiful, because that translates in this project. Now, do you find that translates in some of your other projects with I Love Dick or I'm Dying Up in Here?
I think that for me, in the way that I run my crew, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, so I Love Dick came out of the same, you know, it's Jill's company, Topple, and many of the same key people from Transparent worked on I Love Dick, and totally different kind of show, but had a lot of the same philosophy going into it in terms of our shooting style. And again, that we're there to like honor the actors, give them as much space, minimize the filmmaking machine, get into feeling. It's all about the feeling.
Yes.
All about the feeling. On I'm Dying Up Here, which I shot essentially half of the season and then ended up leaving because I Love Dick came, you know, got the green light. But on I'm Dying Up Here, it was a, you know, very different. It wasn't the family tribe that I belonged to. It was a new group of people,
okay,
really smart, cool people, but a very different kind of show. And I actually took it because it was very different in terms of it being this period piece, very stylized, super stylized lighting, which was a blast to do. And again, it's sort of a counterpoint to what I had been doing on the other shows.
You get to stretch a different muscle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And working with the directors, you know, that show was very much about like sweeping crane shots and elaborate, you know, choreographed Steadicam moves through this comedy club.
Play with different toys.
Yes. And part of me was like, oh, that's not what I do. But then I thought, well, that's why you should do it.
Yeah.
You know,
and like features weren't what you do, but
you do. Right.
You know,
and so, yes, I ended up expanding my, you know, flexing my creative muscles, expanding my repertoire, whatever you want to say. And in that way, it was very good. But to your question, I still ran my crew in the same way of just like, you know, we're figuring this out. We're all, you know, we're, as long as we're in it together and we're paying attention and we care, then everything else will figure itself out.
Right on.
So
cool. So Transparent's 4 seasons in, you said some of the same team was on I Love Dick, but it's a different team on I'm Dying in Here.
I'm Dying Up Here that's a Showtime show. And
okay.
Different producers.
So different, totally different.
Yeah.
So then how is it working with an established team that knows you, like you said, they know the language, and then you coming in leading whole new people?
Well, in fact, I brought over my gaffer and key grip and most of the camera department from the, you know, topple Amazon transparent
right.
I Love Dick shows. Well, not I Love Dick because that happened after. But so I was able to have my people. So in that way, I mean, I got to know different Steadicam operators and some, you know, crane mm-hmm. operators. They were new to me, but my core crew
right.
was the same. Mm-hmm. So I had that comfort factor.
Right.
And then it was just a matter of learning these different, you know, how the producers worked on this show and the different directors that came in. And something that really struck me was, I mean, it's true on our shows, Transparent and I Love Dick, because we do have guest directors coming in. But what I experienced on I'm Dying Up Here was also fascinating to me because, one, it was hour long, so maybe that meant, why does that matter? Maybe because I spent more time with the directors?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I got to know, like, there was something about the different directors that came in there where they each had such a distinct way in. One person, and all of it was interesting to me, and there is no right way,
right?
It's just however they wrap their heads around their episode, but like, somebody came in with graph paper and like the most detailed, elaborate schematics, like battle plans, or like,
wow.
you know, like you think like a football coach or whatever uh-huh. would have all these things, like, here's what I want the camera
kind
to do, and arrows,
everything,
wow. everything.
Okay.
And then, so it was my job to then, you know, interpret and bring my own, you know, creativity or thoughts or whatever, to that style. And then somebody else came in with a sketchbook with, you know, scribbles and drawings and things, but that looked like not doodles, but like, like you looked inside their brain, and nothing was exactly formulated into a definitive uh-huh. statement. It was just more like intuitive doodles, if
right.
that makes sense. And then, you know, and this person would show me like, oh, you see here, this is how I want the thing, you know, the mood to feel in that one room. And I would somehow understand, you know,
that,
yeah, exactly. So I actually really like that part of the job too. Mm-hmm. It's just like knowing and learning that each director is going to come in with a different way of speaking.
Right.
And then that's one of the challenges of being the DP is like how to interpret, especially when it's a show like Transparent where, you know, I'm the consistent factor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, me and other crew members, but in terms of like the director coming in, they're going to rely on me to say, you know, is this within the language of the show or whatever. But
mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating challenge to like constantly meet new people and
right. like new yeah. collaborations, because
yes.
that helps you grow and that helps you
absolutely.
Expand your creativity and then see
absolutely.
How other people work. Like, that's so interesting to hear that, like, different directors for the same project come at it in a different way.
Yep.
Some super organized and other ones may be just not a mess, but a little bit more, like, fluid.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
you have to sort through it a little bit differently.
Yep.
But even like the really organized one, you kind of have to sort through it
yes.
a little bit differently.
Yep.
But then again, to show you, it doesn't have to be perfect.
Right.
There's no perfect way. There's no right way.
Right.
You just have to do.
Right. You learn what works for you in the way that that helps you bring out mm-hmm. your, you know, strongest
right.
vision.
Right. Because it's just another step in storytelling.
Yes.
In the end, we want to tell stories.
Yes.
Which is great. Okay. So then, we've talked about working with different crews and people. How about gear? Is there specific cameras that you really prefer? So, you know, like Transparent's mostly handheld, or you prefer handheld.
Right.
The other one had cranes and Steadicams.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you prefer the handheld style.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the huge benefits of what is now very commonplace, but like the whole digital revolution and cameras shrinking in size.
Mm-hmm.
is a huge gift to the, you know, for those who shoot in the style that I shoot.
Yes.
And not just wanting to do handheld, because you could always handhold a camera, but, you know, there are the cameras these days, like we can shoot a 25-minute take on a scene and the camera, you know, has the memory, you know, space
right.
to record that whole thing, where mm-hmm. that was, you know, that would basically have been unheard of in the past. And so that's a great thing. I mean, actors love it because they can stay in the moment and stay in the scene.
Uh-huh. And longer.
Feel, yes.
Like, you get more time to, like, really dig into
right.
it.
But I will say that even after, you know, even the smallest cameras after a 25-minute take feel heavy.
Yeah.
But I've been using Canon C300 Mark mm-hmm. II for the last few – I've been on Canon basically since the beginning
yeah,
of
I'm
Transparent.
I'm a Canon girl, too.
Oh, yeah. and – you know, part of it is that it has a very, very small footprint. I also love mm-hmm. the images it makes, and that's been a great relationship. you know, as they've improved with each generation. And, you know, when we first started, like, it couldn't record 4K internally. Now it does, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whereas before, because Amazon wants their shows in 4K, you know, you can either choose the camera, and if it doesn't record internally, then you have another thing added on, which just keeps...
makes it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, with all the batteries and focus motors and that kind of thing, the eyepiece, even a tiny camera grows already.
Yeah.
But, again, that the Canon... the C300 is my little friend.
Yes. And I love how so much is modular. So yeah. Like per project, you know, like maybe I don't need the eyepiece for this, or I don't need to add on this 4K thing, but this camera, this piece of gear is still something that I can use.
Yes.
That is really wonderful.
Yeah. And in fact, one thing that we do on, basically, I'll just say on Transparent, even if it's also true, I love Dick, on Transparent is there's a mode where in some of the more intimate scenes, sometimes they're involving nudity or sex, but even if it's just emotional intimacy, mm-hmm. I will operate and we shrink the camera down to, it's just the, you know, the body and the lens and then an onboard monitor and two handles on the sides, and so I can really cradle the thing, and then I'm actually holding it right here.
You're
so
I'm not, as small as possible. Yeah.
So I'm not doing this anymore. It's like it's nestled against me, and I just float around the room with the actors. And,
oh, that's wonderful. That's like such a interesting like tactic for things that are so intimate, you know, because I can imagine it's got to be so stressful as a performer or even as the crew. To be in an intimate situation, whether it's emotional, physical, anything like that, and you're just like, here's all these gadgets everywhere.
Right.
When you're like, nope, there's just Jim that we work with all the time with this little camera.
Exactly. And
don't mind him.
Our boom guy on Transparent is this awesome guy named Eddie, and he's actually taller than me and slightly, you know, he takes up a little more space than I do, I'll just say. And somehow we both disappear. Like I don't see him and the actors don't see me, and we're able to, even in, you know, a room, like however small or large, it's like, it's a pretty cool thing. And, to know that yes, the rest of it all falls away.
Mm-hmm.
And the actors at this point, again, we have such an incredible group, both on camera and behind, that they trust us and we, you know, we support them even when we're doing our jobs, if that makes sense.
Like, yeah.
There's an understanding of they're being held and they can take these risks on camera as these mm-hmm. characters and we've got them.
Yeah.
And,
because you've probably created this sense of everyone's championing everyone else. Like no one's out to sabotage anyone.
Right.
You know, so take your risk. If it doesn't work, it's fine. It's digital. It's gone.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, again, that is a big part of, Jill planted these seeds early on of saying to the actors, you don't have to say the line if it doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. Say what feels right. Take a chance. Jay Duplass, who plays Josh Pfefferman, came in as a filmmaker as well. And, you know, he's been doing more incredible acting lately. But he had this, you know, motto or slogan or whatever he'd say, like, disobligate yourself from trying.
Yeah.
Like, again, let go of expectation. Just do it. Just see what comes out. Mm-hmm. See what happens. It doesn't mean everyone's making stuff up. That's important.
That's different.
Yeah. You know the emotional journey of the scene. And in fact, once Jill told the actors that they didn't have to say the lines, it freed them up to, if they didn't feel it came out right, they pretty much all say the lines. And so it sort of was like reverse psychology, right? But, this whole idea of it's let's explore together. And fuck it up sometimes.
Yeah.
And why not?
Why not?
Because something might be born out of that. What normal, you know, you'd think of as a mistake or too far or too much or whatever is actually, you know, inspires the next thing.
Yeah, definitely. That's kind of how I format this show, where I have an outline. I have questions that I want to cover. There's a roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm not afraid. If there's a really good story, we can go over here. We can explore this. That's totally fine, because maybe there's something really wonderful down this road that we can check out.
Right.
And then we could always go back.
Right.
It's totally fine.
Off the beaten path.
Go take a risk. It's okay. We're still hanging out over here. So speaking of risks, I know that you've directed some episodes as well. Was that risky? Is it different? How was that?
Well, I had a blast.
Yeah.
But in terms of the risk part of it, I do want to back up a moment. And, you know, in the same way that I remember having this desire and feeling to, like, announced to the world or to myself, I want to be a DP, mm-hmm. or I am now a DP, that after the first season of Transparent, I mean, I love the show so much. I get it. I have in me the, you know, the ability to work in this way or to work in that intuitive, you know, feeling place that suits me very much. So I could, I felt this thing in me like, I would love to direct an episode of this show. I mean, it's a great show. And what
so when did you
thing.
Get to direct? How deep in the show was it?
I guess where I was heading, though, is just to say that it took me the getting the courage to say to Jill, who I knew very well at this point, but it was still a big risk for me to say out loud, I would like to direct.
Yeah.
And at the time, Jill said, you know, this was right after season one. Of course, you never know how it's going to turn out or what's going to happen in the future, if there will be another season. But I think we knew, but... you know, it was not official, but I was like, I got to say it out loud. Jill needs to hear it directly from me. And I said that, and Jill said, I'm so glad you told me that. And, you know, just like took it in with appreciation, but wasn't saying like, oh, yes or no or anything, right? But just like, I'm really glad you let me know.
Right.
And I walked away from that thinking, you know what, this was a big deal to just say out loud, no matter what happens. So, but as it turns out, I said those words and season two comes around and Jill says, I've got an episode for you to direct. Yes. And in that case, it was incredible because I knew those people. I knew the cast. We had such a, you know, intimacy and
you know, you've already been in their face.
Yes. So it would have been very, very different had it been, you know, on a show that I was not a part of or whatever. But, so I've now directed a few episodes on Transparent, including our upcoming season four. And, I got to do one on I Love Dick, which was its own thrill because I grew up watching Kevin Bacon in the movies. So to suddenly be on set directing Kevin Bacon, part of me is still like,
what?
I'm just a kid from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and now here I'm in Hollywood and I'm directing Kevin Bacon. but so, you know, again, in a very loving, supportive environment like those shows, I was able to take chances and try things. And sometimes they worked and sometimes they didn't. And, but it, to me, it's again on this, it's part of the continual line of me just, you know, being part of storytelling.
So when you directed, did you also have a, did you bring somebody else on to be the DP?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't want to do both?
Yeah. I mean, I've thought of, I've had that thought, but then it's like, in other words, I'd rather give my full self to the directing job, even if I think I could do both. As it turns out, even within the episodes that I was directing, when there were scenes like I was talking about earlier, I still grabbed the camera.
Right.
So there are scenes in all my episodes that I have also shot. But it was really great to be able to have a DP and, you know, not think about lighting and not think about other choices and be totally with the actors. So,
yeah. And that's great. And in small projects like what I've been working on, I typically have to do all of it, but when I do work on bigger ones and I can just be the producer or just be the host, it just makes a different kind of project. And then it's a different experience because you can really focus, you know, let other people do what they're good at. And then you're probably giving somebody else a chance to like learn something new for them.
Yes.
You know, because I'm sure that the DP that you got was experienced, but nobody else had touched the show.
Right.
You know, so you're like, here, take my version of this.
Yes.
And make it so.
Yes. That is true.
Yeah. Good. Did they do all right for you?
They did beautifully.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So I'd love to see production timeline or talk about production timeline for you. Like, where does your work come in? I know it's on set, but you know, do you get the script first? And then you talk to the director, director's notes. Where do you fit in? When do you start plugging in your work?
Well, so on, let's say I'll talk first about when it's the new season of Transparent, let's say. So I will get, you know, an early broad outline of the shape of the season, where things are heading, or if there's anything, you know, that might be off the beaten path or something we haven't quite done or a place we haven't been to or whatever it is. So I kind of start absorbing that, knowing that it's, again, it's the roadmap. It's not the Bible. It's not literal, like nothing will change from here on out, but it's just to give, start things percolating. But typically I would get together with Jill and Kat Smith, our amazing production designer, and then talk about what that means for us again, in terms of like the broad overview of the season. And then, but in terms of like, once we're in production, you know, I've chosen to shoot every episode. There are a lot of shows, typically more hour-long shows than half-hour, that rotate DPs, right? So one can be prepping and scout locations with the new director and have time with the new director. Because we don't do that, what ends up happening is I will do as much as I can, like via email or after work or at lunch. Like, you know, while we're shooting one episode, I'll try and meet with the incoming director. Oftentimes we'll meet on the weekend because I want them to feel totally supported and prepared as they can be. And that's, that way has worked out, but it's very much, it all becomes a swirl of just nonstop, you know,
just
shooting,
go.
Shooting, prepping, thinking about them, getting the next script while shooting the previous one.
How long are you shooting a season?
We have 5 shoot days per episode. And we take a week, I mean, it's supposed to be a week hiatus in the middle, but it ends up being like we catch up on some stuff that maybe we have to shoot or we scout or whatever. But it's, so it's essentially like 12 weeks.
Okay.
So that's not that huge of a time commitment, which is also, I think, I like that part of it as
well. How many episodes?
10.
10. 12 weeks to do 10 because there's that one break week, which is really like a catch up week.
Yeah. I mean, and actually, if I'm adding in the other prep, it's probably more like 14 weeks, but again, not bad at all. Huge amount of time, yeah.
Yeah, which sometimes breaks my heart a little bit when now with binge watching, when I know I can tear through a show in like a weekend.
Right.
And then I go back and I think like as a production person, I was like, oh my gosh, so much work went into this. And I just ripped through it.
Right.
You know, I should have savored it a little bit more. So I have tried to get better with some shows that like I try to space it out a little bit just to like let it sink in.
Right. Which I actually think is good. Yeah. I mean, I enjoy binging too, but there is something to either making yourself wait or on shows where you have to wait a week between or whatever, because there is stuff that will reveal itself or that, you know, you'll
appreciate. You process it a little bit and then you're like, oh, yeah, that's, I didn't even realize that upon watching it. But if you didn't take the time to really absorb it and you're like 4 episodes further into the show, then you've just completely missed this little nugget of delicious creativity.
Yes.
Cool. So is there anything that you would say has happened as far as like production fails, where you know, something just went completely awry and it ended up being fine?
I can't really think of anything. I mean,
because it sounds like you have like this already this mindset of like, we'll do it, it'll work out.
Right.
So yeah, I could definitely see where things wouldn't necessarily like be ringing alarms as a fail.
Yeah, I mean, I shot a feature a couple of years ago, an independent, small little comedy, tennis comedy. And like the day, basically, if we prep, you know, we were prepping and that was Friday night and we were supposed to start at a location on Monday morning, or maybe it was even, it was like 24-hour notice. We lost our main location, like the place where the main character was supposed to live.
Mm-hmm.
Something went awry with the contract or somebody messed up and didn't sign something. I mean, that was, but that's about the only thing I can think of that was like, but even that ended up working out.
Yeah.
You know, because it usually does. But it's like definitely on our shows now, it is that thing where part of it is the openness, the, you know, let go of expectation and just be where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And also the fact that we also have an incredible team and production team and resources. So it's like they can navigate if something like that happened to be like, oh, no problem. We'll just switch the schedule and we'll do this then. And then, you know what I mean?
So yeah.
I don't feel like there's been anything that stands out as like, and oh shit.
Yeah. And I think that's like a really just wonderful mindset of getting to that point where you're like, oh, it's going to be fine. Like maybe that's not exactly what we planned.
Right.
But it's not the end of the world.
Right.
We'll keep going, switch it around. It's no big deal.
Yep.
You know, cause we're creating art. We're not curing cancer.
Right.
You know, so
it's
fine.
Right.
It's totally fine. So do you have any tips for independent filmmakers, like people that are just in Milwaukee, like the young you,
right?
He wants to make something now. He wants to make a short film to put on YouTube.
Right. Well, I think, you know, part of, again, what's been true now for a number of years, but what's amazing is you have a camera in your pocket, you know, or the tools needed to go from start to finish on a film are now so readily available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can edit on your laptop and you could shoot it with your phone. I still resist that idea, but, you know, the biggest thing I think, which again is not groundbreaking or anything, but it's like just start doing it. Just go for it. Just muck about, play, see what happens, try it out, Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Find people. Here's what I would say, something that I feel like I learned pretty early on, but is definitely something that I now move. It's a key part of what I would consider in taking a project is, are the people nice people?
Yes.
Are they kind? They can be passionate.
Mm-hmm.
They can, have vocal disagreements on a creative level.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's any reason to be an asshole.
No.
And, even when I'm hiring crew, or I would say, to my gaffer, or let's say I'm talking to my key grip and they're talking about who, they want to use this person as a dolly grip. And they would run it by me out of courtesy. And again, at this point, they know. It's like, I would just say, like, are they good at their jobs? If the answer is yes, great. Are they a nice person to be around for the 12, 14-hour days we're going to have? Because
mm-hmm.
I have no tolerance for people screaming. There's no reason to be a jerk.
Yeah.
People are going to get upset or uptight because that happens in close quarters or in any relationship. But you start from this foundation of like, we're just trying to do our best and things might, get a little crazy, but we're going to communicate as opposed to mm-hmm. turn into an asshole.
Yes.
And that's so for the kid in Milwaukee, the young me or whomever, it's like do it. You have the tools readily available and then just find passionate, kind, committed people to work with. There's no reason to work with anybody else.
Yeah. That's really, really wonderful advice. And I would love to know, because it being On the Fly filmmaking, do you have any stories in mind of something where you really, like, on Transparent, had to do something on the fly?
On the fly. I mean, so much of it is.
So much, right?
So much of it is on the fly.
If you guys are on Amazon Prime Video, you've watched Transparent, there's a little video or little audio interview that you did. There's like 10 minutes, super easy to listen to, but there's a story about when Gabby's character is first meeting Maura?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And the scene was over, but then they were still exploring something and you came back.
Yes.
Is there another story that's like that? Because I want people to go and listen to that story. I thought it was really great.
Well, to your point, there are times when, again, now it's become such a common thing for us. It might be hard for me to remember specifics, mm-hmm. but one thing that happens is, when an actor finishes a scene or the scene is done, but they're still in the moment or in the feeling, like I sometimes still have to remind the camera operators or whatever, even if the director says cut or the AD says cut, they will roll the camera for an extra few seconds because sometimes things happen or, an actor closes their eyes or whatever that is this little mm-hmm. moment, this little gift to the scene that the director could use later.
Yeah.
Same thing with when we're in between setups, like we'll just shoot cutaways of a room or whenever we're on location, just I'll send the camera off for a little bit just to grab shots of the neighborhood because you never know what use that could be. That's just more of a
technical
approach, right? but yes, there is that thing that you mentioned of Gabby. I mean, here's something. There was at the end of season one. Well, I don't know if I want to talk about that for people who haven't seen it.
Yeah,
it would spoil.
Okay. No, we don't want to spoil.
No spoilers. But put it this way: there's a scene in I think it's season two when Maura goes out to this dance club with some friends,
mm-hmm.
and it's sort of the first time that she is with her community of these new friends in the transgender community, and they're like, oh, you gotta let's go out dancing. And this is new. I mean, Maura is almost 70 years old, mm-hmm. right? It's like to go out to a club at that age, normally she'd be in bed, kind of thing. And again, it's actually a real place in the Valley that on one night a week becomes this welcoming open space.
What's
for
the place?
It's called the Oxwood.
Okay.
And really sweet people who run the place. And again, as our world has been opening up and understanding and become more accepting of, people who don't fit normal gender roles or identity, this place has been around for years and years and years, right? Anyway, so in this scene, though, it's just Maura's going to dance. I don't know how, where, when. She's sitting at a table. We just know that it's like when Jeffrey Tambor as Maura feels like this is the song she would dance to, she's going to get up, kind of thing. So, and it's that scene ends that episode. I don't remember which one it is, but it was a really special moment because in the show, it really is. I mean, Jeffrey and others have talked about this. Like, Maura is basically a teenager, even though she's almost 70. Like, she's figuring out, you know, what, how do I want to wear my hair? What kind of clothing?
Yeah.
You know, who am I in the world? How do I interact? You know, what's dating going to be like? Whatever it is, it's like all these new discoveries, and there's a youthfulness or a naivete or whatever to Maura. And in this scene, it was sort of like she really finds her place and finds it on the dance floor, as it turns out. And there's all these mirrors. So it really was this experience of Maura seeing herself in a way for the first time.
Yeah.
And it was this really, like, in the room, I got goosebumps because you could feel it. And that's also a very cool thing that I've learned. It's like, when you feel it in the room, whether I'm operating or not, it's like pretty much a guarantee that it's like
the audience.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that moment, and just following Jeffrey and improvising with, you know, Maura on the dance floor was pretty much as on the fly as it gets.
Right.
And it's this really wonderful, beautiful moment.
Yeah. So, like, key takeaway for that for other filmmakers is stay in the moment, which is, we've mentioned a few different times, is like, you are also in the scene.
Yes.
You know, so stay in it and be open and willing to go where it goes.
Yes.
Let it take you there.
Yes.
So great. On the dance floor.
Exactly. Awesome.
Do you have any final advice for creators out there that want to explore filmmaking?
I think we covered it.
Yeah, I think we're pretty good.
Be nice, make art.
Be nice, make art. And my final question for you is, who was your favorite Muppet?
Oh, my goodness. My favorite. I mean, come on. It has to be Kermit.
Yeah? Kermit's your favorite?
But I have a huge, huge soft place for, you know, Kermit's nephew, Robin.
Yeah.
The tiny little guy. Yep.
Yeah. You like Robin? Animal's my favorite.
Okay. Animal, also great.
Yeah.
I had an animal puppet when I was a kid.
Yeah. But and then anyway. I know not strictly Muppet, but Sesame Street. I met Cookie Monster.
Okay. Cookie Monster.
In real life.
Awesome.
And I cried because he said my name. And I was talking all day with the, you know, the puppeteer and the voice actor all day because we were shooting some behind the scenes stuff.
Oh,
and
that's
talking with him all day. And then we're ready for this shoot. And he
becomes Cookie.
Hi, Mary Lou. And I was like, oh my God.
That is amazing.
It was really magical. And there's definitely a photo of me floating on the internet, like tearing up with Cookie Monster.
I love
it. And I I see the guy, but it's magic. And that's what we create.
Yes.
It's magic because that is for someone else. And then seeing the behind the scenes, like you saw the photo that inspired you.
Yep.
Even when you're behind the scenes and you see all the bones, it's still magical.
That is true.
It's still magical. So go out there and chase your dreams. Go create art and be nice. So let everyone know where they can find you again. Instagram?
Right.
What's your Instagram handle?
Oh, yeah. It's Jim Frohna.
Jim Frohna.
Yeah.
It's Jim Frohna?
No. Just my name.
Because that's a thing sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
All right.
Just.
At Jim Frohna.
Yes.
Find him on Instagram. Also, watch Transparent on Amazon Prime Video, now on season 4.
Season 4 comes out September 22nd.
Yes.
Yes.
I've got a lot of binge watching to do to catch up. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Thank you. It was fun.
I am Mary Lou Mandel. You can find me all over the internet at Mary Lou Mandel, and we will catch you next time on The Fly Filmmaking.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.